Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You are now entering the Pseudo-Archaeology Podcast, a show that uncovers what's fact, what's fake, and what's fun in the crazy world of pseudo-archaeology. Hello and welcome to the Pseudo-Archaeology Podcast, episode 138. I am your host, Dr. Andrew Kinkella, and tonight, if you thought Atlantis was stupid, welcome to the land of moo, which rhymes with boo. All right, I'm just going to start out with an apology, as per usual. I'm sorry, you guys. I'm sorry you have to go through this with me. But as always, my pain gets a little better when I turn it in to our pain. And this one, you know what? Before I even get into this, I'm just going to talk about myself. I'm just talk about myself for a while. So we're recording this in March. I just had a birthday recently. I'm still alive, so that's cool. And it's doubly cool because I am healing from my motorcycle accident. Those of you who, you know, only listen to this to hear how I am. And I do really appreciate my health because, you know, when you have like a motorcycle, and I'm not here to say my motorcycle accident was like insane. You know, I didn't have to go to the hospital or anything. I did go to urgent care and I didn't break anything, although I got really close. But it's just, it's nice when that stuff kind of heals. And, you know, if any of this kind of thing has happened to you guys, at least for me, I'm like, man, the human body is an amazing thing, you know? So that's kind of where I'm at. I'll also say that since we're recording here in early March, it's finally, at least in Southern California, getting a little bit sunnier, a little bit nicer out. Finally, we had a very wet winter. And I have to say that I think I get a little depressed, you know, with that, like, what is it called? The daylight thing where you know, you don't have enough daylight in your life. I think it brings me down a little. And, you know, friends, because of that, I think you should blame the sun. You should blame the sun for what I'm about to talk about today. Yeah. It's the sun's fault for not coming up enough because, man, we're going to do moo. And what I find in all this pseudo-archaeology stuff is you basically have two roads to Stupidville, right? And road number one to Stupidville is the stupid fun route. And that road is a nice route. Some of us have been on that road with me. When we did things like the mystery spot, remember that one way back? We did like the thing. I would even argue even Atlantis has some fun to it from time to time, you know? But others are the other road. Road number two is not stupid fun. It's stupid, you know? And on stupid road is like My perennial least favorite, which is ancient Maya astronauts. Oh, just so freaking dumb. But along that note also comes moo. The lost continent of moo. All right. So, you know, this one's actually, it's funny. Dealing with the lost continent of moo is, it's one of them that's really easy. Like, there's really not much to say. And it's also kind of hard and a little difficult at the same time, because a lot of things, as we're going to see, a lot of things kind of come together at the same time to make this foolishness possible. Oh, this couldn't happen just any time, friends. It had to be a special time and place for the alignment of stupidity to form a huge stupid laser that hit all of us. And it's going to bring in people who we've talked about in the past. It's going to bring in like Brasseur de Bourbourg and Augustus Le Plongeon, Ignatius Donnelly, like all these people kind of, they have to come together to make the stupid stew. You know, it's just not one person. It's all together. It's a community of stupid to make this. Yeah. It's like they come together. And also, it's so funny, as I made my notes for this, I was like, man, I've said this before on this podcast. I was like, man, I got to do a an overarching podcast on Mayanism, because this one touches on that too. Again, Mayanism is like this new agey belief where it kind of has its roots in Maya culture, but then it like twists it and bastardizes it and makes us this sort of thin new age bullshit thing, you know? But I've been surprised at, even me as a Maya archaeologist, right? I've been surprised how much Mayanism has kind of influenced a lot of these stories that I tell you guys. So that's a note to me. The other note is that, man, I think I got to do a real podcast on cracking the Maya code, because I keep coming back to kind of the translation of the Maya hieroglyphics and that kind of stuff. And I realize I'm like, man, I got to tell everyone kind of the story of the cracking of the Maya code, because you guys, the story of the cracking of the Maya code is fascinating. I love that story. I love telling it to my students. The cracking of the Maya code, it's great in a lot of different ways. But what's cool is it's kind of opposite or very different from the translation of Egyptian hieroglyphics, right? It, instead of sort of one singular person or a main person, you have a series of people, often those who aren't academics at all, you know? And so that story is just great. So yeah, in time, I got to do a podcast on Mayanism, a podcast on cracking the Maya code, to kind of make everything make sense. So where does that leave us? It leaves us at talking about the lost continent of Mo. Obviously, this is a counterpoint to Atlantis, right? But the difference is, even though Atlantis is fake, Atlantis has a very deep history of being fake, right? And we just covered that in the previous podcast. In 137, we went over Atlantis and we talked about how it sprang out of Plato's brain, you know, and then it was just such a good story that it kind of kept within our kind of cultural memory, right? The story just keeps getting told and told and told again. And it's so interesting that people want to, they want to know like the real basis of this. And it's very unsatisfying when you know or learn that the basis is nothing. It's a made up story that's just been told and retold. There's nothing real about it. And so that's so uninspiring, but true and factual, that people just will never, ever let it go. And so one of the fallouts of never letting Atlantis go, since Atlantis is all about the old world, it's all about Europe, right? It's really about the Mediterranean world. But there's been enough idiotic interpretations of Atlantis where sometimes they push it out into the Atlantic, right? So over time, people have been like, wait, if there was an ancient civilization in the Atlantic, Well, friends, there's one other ocean that's even bigger. And if it's even bigger, it must be even better. And that I'm talking about is the Pacific Ocean. What about the ancient culture that fell under the waves in the Pacific? So that's where this comes from, right? And so the setup, the geography of Mu, the geography is... If you look at these made up maps of Mu, and the idea of Mu is much more recent. In a minute, I'll give you a setup of kind of where it comes from the 1860s, 1870s, 1880s. the geography of Mu is basically this huge continent that like covers most of the Pacific Ocean. The idea is that Mu was this supercontinent that had, you know, super intelligent group of people there who, of course, were the ancient ancestors of all high civilization, you know, and it's sunk under the waves. And all that's left are the Polynesian islands, right? Be it Hawaii, be it Easter Island, be it Fiji, pick your poison. Those islands are just the remnants of a supercontinent that has fallen beneath the waves. Now, already, you're like, but Kinkella, what about this thing I like to call geology? I'm like, I know. Realize that the story of Mu comes about, it comes about in the 1890s, but it's really pushed in the early 1900s, which is actually before modern plate tectonics is accepted by science, right? And we'll talk about that too. We'll touch a little on plate tectonics and continental drift and how like that didn't even really come into major scientific usage until the 1950s. So does modern science negate all aspects of Mu? Yes, of course it does. Now, at this point, I can't even believe you're still listening because you're like, Kinkella, man, like you haven't even really given me the like step by step setup of Mu. And I'm like, I know I haven't. And I will do that. But you know what I'm going to do first? I'm going to take a break. Deal with it.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome back to the Pseudoarchaeology Podcast, episode 138. I'm your host, Dr. Andrew Kinkella, and we have been, unfortunately for all of us, discussing the lost continent of Mu. Why have I done this to you guys? All right, so let's do sort of a surgical breakdown of what Mu is, where it came from. Now, if you look up Mu online on like Wikipedia or this kind of stuff, I believe it's going to say that it was made up by Augustus Le Plongeon. Remember Augustus Le Plongeon? Episode 136, for those who don't. And that's mostly true. But I think what we're going to see is the Lost Continent of Mu was kind of made up by several people. They were kind of building on each other. And I'll go through that right here. So the first step in making up the lost continent of Mu actually comes from Brasir de Borborg. Remember him? Episode 130. So Brasir de Borborg, this is one of those guys. Actually, he and Le Plongeon are kind of in the same category. Brasir de Borborg, if we remember, this guy, he's first off, he's going to die in 1874, right? So he's actually really doing his work in like the 1850s, 1860s. And he's the guy who did some really good stuff, but ultimately just translated it really terribly, right? If you remember, he like translated the Popol Vuh. This is all Maya stuff, right? He found like Diego de Landa's alphabet. He found a copy of the Madrid Codex, which is a very important ancient Maya document. And so there's some really good stuff there, right? He spent time with this stuff, time in the Maya world, time with real Maya things. And so there are those aspects that really help us in knowing and understanding the ancient Maya. Unfortunately, if you remember that episode or if you want to go check it out, he adds the idea of Atlantis to all this stuff, right? And that you're like, everything is so good. Oh, you're working with this real, you know, scientific stuff. Oh, you're doing a real interesting research. And then you're like, oh, damn it. But I don't blame these earliest guys so much. I blame the later guys much more. So in his attempts at translating the Madrid Codex, he incorrectly translated this glyph as Mu and, you know, said that it related to some lost continent or something. He was trying to shove in the Atlantis narrative, you know. And so he kind of did that. Nobody cared. This is in like the 1860s, you know. But as always, I said nobody cared. Mostly nobody cared. And as we always say, just like in Doctor Who, the master's ring, the bad guy will always live on. Somebody else is going to grab the ring. Augustus Le Plongeon grabs the ring from Brasir de Borborg. And Augustus Le Plongeon, too, if you remember him, he was the guy who took really great photos in the Maya world, right? He is operating about 20 years after Borborg, right? Borborg's kind of the first person, kind of a generation before. And Borborg kind of lays the groundwork, even almost sometimes, I think, unwittingly, for these later people who become more pseudo-archaeology as you go. But Augustin Le Plongeon still has some good stuff, right? He's been to the Maya world. He's worked in the Maya world. He took some, again, great photos. He made some good, very good records of what he did at the time. Unfortunately, he also came to terrible conclusions trying to shove Atlantis in. If you guys remember, he thought that the Maya were actually the sort of Garden of Eden. And then technology and culture went from the Maya to the Atlanteans, and the Atlanteans then brought it to Egypt. And Augustus Le Plongeon got increasingly more sort of foolish and crazy as he went on. Augustus Le Plongeon, though, is going to live until like 1908. And so he's going to be working in the 1880s into the 1890s. And he's the one who did the series of books with like Queen Mu and Prince Chakmul. Remember that? He's also the guy who named the Chakmul. So he and his wife, again, were in the Maya world, you know, and as they did some of this good data collection, I guess you could say, they had terrible conclusions based on their data. And they just wrote these, you know, flights of fancy narratives that had nothing to do with reality. Then he's the last of the guys who actually have real experience in the Maya world. Where it becomes pure stupidity is with your friend and mine, Ignatius Donnelly. Remember him? Episode 125. Ignatius Donnelly then just makes up a purely fantastical story about Atlantis, right? And then we're off. So you see how a bit of early pseudo-archaeology started with some facts in there, and there were early guys just trying their best, you know, but then bastardized itself into pure fiction. And I find the break is when Ignatius Donnelly does Atlantis, the Antediluvian World in 1882. In this mix, you then get this guy, James Churchwald. And if you look Mu up, he's kind of the first name that comes up. James Churchwald is going to grab the evil ring from Augustus Le Plongeon. What's interesting is James Churchwell actually hung out with Augustus Le Plongeon in the 1890s with him and his wife, right? What's the story of James Churchwell? Okay, James Churchwell lived from 1851 to 1936. He's originally a British guy. Early in his life, let's say in the 1880s, he travels to Sri Lanka. Sri Lanka is the big island off the coast of India, working in, I think, in the tea industry or something like that. Makes sense. Early in his life, he has sort of travel experiences. He comes back, I think he becomes like a U.S. citizen, or at least he emigrates back to the U.S. in the 1890s, I think. And it's in that time, too, where he discusses the idea of Mo with the Le Plongeons. Now, he doesn't do too much with it until much later in his life. He finally starts writing a series of books on Mo when he's 75 years old. So if you do the math, this is 1926, right? This is later. Bresser de Bourbourg is long dead. Augustus Le Plongeon is gone too. So he's, as an old man, he's looking back and writing these stories. His first book that comes out in 1926 is called The Lost Continent of Mo, Motherland of Man. And, okay, what's it about, right? What's his ideas on Mo? Right here, I'm going to quote the Wikipedia entry. Now, this is not the Wikipedia entry for Mo. This is the Wikipedia entry for James Churchwell, because I think it's a really good boil down of the idea of Mo. You ready? Here we go. According to Churchwell, Mo extended from somewhere north of Hawaii to the south, as far as the Fijis and Easter Island, right? So it's huge. He claimed Mo was the site of the Garden of Eden and home to 64 million inhabitants, known as the Nakhals. Again, where does he get his numbers? Where does he get his names? Whatever. Its civilization, which flourished 50,000 years before Churchwell's day, a very round number, was technologically more advanced than his own. You don't say. He said the ancient civilizations of India, Babylon, Persia, Egypt, and the Mayas were the decayed remains of Mu's colonies. Good God, where have we heard this kind of stuff before? Churchwell claimed to have gained his knowledge of this lost land after befriending an Indian priest. You don't say. Who taught him to read an ancient dead language spoken by only 3 people in all of India. The priest disclosed the existence of several ancient tablets written by the Nakhals. He allowed Churchwell to see these records after initial reluctance, of course. You know, so the Indian priest is going to be like, no, I can't. And then Churchwell's like, come on. And he's like, okay. His knowledge remained incomplete as the available tablets were mere fragments of a larger text. You don't say. Churchwell claimed to have found verification and further information in the records of other ancient peoples. His writings attempt to describe the civilization of Mo, its history, inhabitants, and influence on subsequent history and civilizations. Churchwell claimed that the ancient Egyptian sun god Ra originated with the Mo. He claimed that Ra was the word which the Nakhals used for sun, as well as for their god and rulers. And there you go. Yes, I know. What a horrendous crock of bullshit. But let's break this down. Okay, so there's your background of Mu. Obviously just made up. You know, it's just, and it's so typical. Oh, I talked to an ancient shaman. Yes, I did. You got to realize he's writing this when he was 75. It's like it was 50 years in the past when he was in Sri Lanka. He's making all this up. But I bet. You know, don't we always wonder if these people truly believe their lies or not? I bet they do. It's like we wonder, does Graham Hancock believe his own bullshit? Of course he does at this point. Did he believe it? Did Graham Hancock believe his bullshit in like 1990? I bet he didn't. But he does now. Again, we all are the heroes of our own stories, right? I think that James Churchwell, he just kind of ginned up his own remembrances and then believed his own remembrances. He knew an Indian guy, you know, or maybe somebody kind of told him a story at one point, having nothing to do with this. It just happened to be an old guy who's talked about some sort of history, but he's translated this in his own mind, you know, to make a believable for himself lie. We've seen this so often in pseudo-archaeology, right? Let's remember back to, way back to Mitchell Hedges' skull. This is the Crystal Skull of Belize, episode 97, friends. With the Crystal Skull of Belize, remember the woman, it's the daughter, you know, she had it and she lived to be very, very old, like 100 years old. And she had this story of how her dad came across it and she found it in Belize and all this. And if you look at the facts, her story is a total lie. But I'm sure she believed her lie because it's an amalgamation of some truths, you know, that are twisted and bastardized to make a lie. They're the best lies, right? They're based in some bits and bobs. You know, she had been to Belize, you know, but none of the rest happened. So I do find in talking about pseudo-archaeology, it's also a really interesting psychological study into lying and false claims and that kind of stuff, you know, and how people believe ostentatious, odd, obviously false bullshit, but they believe it, you know, they have substituted it in their mind and it is now their reality. And I'm sure James Churchwald did it with all this moo stuff, because again, the numbers and the dates, it's just fanciful crap that he just slapped on there, right? What I love, if you also look down on his Wikipedia page at the bottom, it has a list of his books and the dates. So Lost Continent of Boom, Motherland of Man comes out in 1926. Oh, and I also am curious. That's also, I think it might even be the same year that Margaret Mead's Coming of Age in Samoa comes out. Now, Margaret Mead is a real anthropologist who studied real people in Samoa and talked about adolescence in Samoa. I think that The Lost Continent of Moo also comes out at a time in the 1920s when there's a resurgence in this interest of just sort of what would be seen as exciting travel related, you know, faraway places. And we also have to realize this is only like 4 years after the discovery of King Tut. So along with Tut mania, along with the excitement over Coming of Age in Samoa, you can see how The Lost Continent, a book on this would slot right in and be kind of in the right time, in the right place. After this, he must have met with some success with this book. He writes The Children of Mo, Sacred Symbols of Mo, Cosmic Forces of Mo. And then, if that's not enough, the second book of the Cosmic Forces of Mo. I'm bummed that he didn't get to Mo the Revenge, Mo and the Wrath of Khan, and my favorite, Mo 2, Electric Boogaloo. When we return, my closing thoughts on the Lost Continent of Mu.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, and welcome back to the Pseudo-Archaeology Podcast, episode 138, and we have been discussing the Lost Continent of Mu. And my final thoughts. There's just, you know, what you think about it for yourselves, you guys. Like, what would you say at this point? You know, it's so thin. There's just not much. You know, I can see how this can be a dark hole of doom and gloom when people start to argue about it. Because there's no argument. It's so obviously just a dopey, dumb, empty, thin story, right? Sometimes it's even called a hoax. I wouldn't give it that much credit. It's not a hoax. It's just a dumb story. Like, nobody goes, wait, I bought some plane tickets to Moo and what? Oh, damn it. You know, you don't do that. And, you know, because of that, it just deserves to be laughed at and not taken seriously. On the flip side, it's like if somebody makes a video game about Moo or makes a fictional story of Moo or makes like a sci-fi movie about Moo, I think that's awesome. You know, I think that can be like really fun. I got no problem with that. Same with Atlantis. You know, it's intrinsically just like silly fun. You know, there are some other terms that come up if you guys look up Moo. You might have also heard of Lemuria. And sometimes I think Churchwald in his writings even kind of put the two together. Lemuria, the idea of Lemuria was an ancient lost continent. This idea came up in the 1860s. The idea was it sunk into the Indian Ocean. And the reason why this lost continent, again, you know, just fill it in with the same story. But it's called Lemuria because it's the lost island where lemurs are from. Except it's totally not, because we know where lemurs are from. Lemurs are from Madagascar. Madagascar is an island. It's not lost. And it's right off the coast of Africa. If you're curious about lemurs, I recommend a movie called Madagascar, right? And in seriousness, the animated Madagascar, not bad, you know, with the idea of lemurs and that kind of stuff. So that's one. It's from the 1860s. They didn't have a handle. 1864, Darwin's book on evolution comes out in 1859. It only came out 5 years earlier, right? They still don't have a good hook on where exactly primates are from and the organization. We've gone so far past that. It's like, there's, why can't we just all agree on something as silly as Lemuria and be like, oh yeah, that was, you know, that was a mistake from the 1860s. Like, that's understandable. But no, the pseudo-archaeology crowd never lets any of their bullshit go, right? And that's one of their great problems, is how to slap all this together. And that's where the hilarity ensues. On the flip side, science does move forward. And the foolish idea of the lost continent of Moo, you can't argue against it until you get modern plate tectonics and continental drift, which weren't roundly supported by the scientific community until the 1950s. Isn't that crazy? The idea that there's like seafloor spreading, that the continents move on the Earth over time. There were a couple people in the geology world who argued against plate tectonics for a long time. They really pushed hard in the 1930s into the 1940s, by the 1950s, finally. And it is one of those things, a famous scientific story where the guy who came up with plate tectonics, and again, every 8-year-old who looks at a world map goes, hey, South America and Africa fit together. You know, that was denied until the 1950s. Now, that is, the people who argued against that, they did argue a bit too long. They were a bit too like stalwart in their beliefs. They wouldn't let go their beliefs that were obviously wrong. But look, science moves forward, right? Nobody in science argues against plate tectonics these days. Nobody argues against continental drift, because there's good research, good data, and it's easily provable, right? And that's great. That's what makes science so great. On the flip side, stuff like Moo and Lemuria are obvious examples of what makes pseudo-archaeology so stupid. Right. And people just hold on and double down on this miasma. And whenever you can say miasma, it's a good day. This miasma of beliefs and half truths and cherry picked half data, you know, to make this bastardized, twisted, odd lie, which is also pretty fun to talk about. But still, you know, it's just sad. And of course, in all this, in all the lost continent of Moo situation, you also have, you got to throw in the, like, you know, racist aspect of it too, which is like, of course. So if you remember back, the church words idea of Moo was that the Moovians they believed in the sun god Ra, right? And that's just a rip off of Egypt, where there is really a sun god called Ra. But church word was like, oh yeah, well, the Easter Island, its true name is Rapa Nui. See, so the islanders, or the original Moovians, and I don't even know if they're supposed to be called Moovians, but I think it's pretty good. The Moovians name that island after the sun, Rapa Nui, right? Which is ludicrous. But then, you know, he's just sort of, again, bastardizing the true Rapa Nuians culture. He's like, look. But see, current Polynesians out there, be they on Hawaii, Fiji, you know, Rapa Nui, pick your poison. Current Polynesians, no. They're not related to the true Moovians, to the true clean and pure and civilized Moovians. No. The current Polynesians, look, guys, they're just savages. Okay. I mean, I have my standards. Right. So that's what Church Ward is saying. There's always that. Why did he even have to say that? You know, like, why couldn't he just be happy with his bullshit Mo story? No, he's got to also give that little racist, like, addition there, you know, and underneath it all, unfortunately, in so much of pseudo-archaeology, you have that little racist quotient where this idea of civilization with a capital C, it started way before them and moved on to other places. And what's left in all these other places of the world, except for, like, you know, Egypt and Europe, is just a bunch of backwards second class citizens. You know, and it's just, you're not making any friends with that, dude. But yeah, even with all that, Mo, this cancer of Mo, is still with us today, my friends. Like, the radiation therapy continues not to work 100%. If you guys remember, maybe in the last 20, 30 years, any of you who are fans of various TV shows, you know, on this stuff, like, there's one where off the coast of Japan, they found some straight looking stones. You know, it's just like the stones of Atlantis in Bermuda, same idea, but they're like, this is evidence of Mu. You know, and of course, with modern geology, the Pacific Ocean is just a huge ocean plate. And the Pacific Islands are, of course, volcanic, which is awesome in its own way, because you have an island like the Big Island of Hawaii with Mauna Loa and Mauna Kea, which are the tallest mountains on Earth. They just had to, they're volcanoes, and they had to make it from the ocean floor. This is, you know, true geology is really interesting and awesome. And of course, the various cultures in Polynesia are varied and deep and interesting and awesome. You know, you have the Polynesians, like, man, I always vote them as the best navigators on Earth, you know, with their double hold canoes. So much cool stuff, you know, but you gotta dirty it with this cancer. But I don't want to leave on a low note, do you? I don't. So we can just, let's just shake Mu off. Shake it off like some fleas. And think about something completely different. Go outside, dude. Spring's coming. The sun's out. You haven't had a motorcycle accident, hopefully. And life is good. Enjoy yourselves, my friends, and I'll see you guys next time. Thanks for listening to the Pseudo-Archaeology Podcast. Please like and subscribe wherever you like and subscribe. And if you have questions for me, Dr. Andrew Kinkella, feel free to reach out using the links below or go to my YouTube channel, Kinkella Teaches Archaeology. See you guys next time.
This episode was produced by Chris Webster from his RV traveling the United States, Tristan Boyle in Scotland, DigTech LLC, Culturo Media, and the Archaeology Podcast Network, and was edited by Rachel Roden.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.